referee is reaching into their pockets. What's that card going to be, John? Oh, it's a red card. And that can mean only one thing. It's the wake up morning edition of the Get Off My Pitch podcast. I am Eric Paisley, your host. With me this morning is...
John Brennig without coffee, so, you know.
Yeah, let's, well, how about this? How about just wake us up when we get to the playoffs? How are you doing this morning, John?
Yeah. I'm doing pretty good. Enjoying vacation so far, so, you know, can't complain.
John is our first remote podcaster on the podcast. Well, I guess I've done him from Montego, but John is truly remote out in the Wild West.
Yes, in the great state of Montana, big sky country and all that jazz.
All right, we are going to talk about the last Saturday's match against Seattle. We're going to talk about the hardest working player and the most valuable player. Not much to talk about goal-wise. And then, of course, in our second segment, we'll talk about some questions. Not uncomfortable, but not exactly comfortable either. John will share some stats. Hopefully soccer-related, not flight-related, because he's got a lot of opinions about air travel. And we'll tell you who or what needs to get off our pitch. And, of course, we will finish up our podcast today with talking about the playoffs. All right, John, gut reaction to Saturday's match against Seattle.
It was disappointing. I mean, it felt like we finally rolled out what I would call... Mm-hmm. Like an A-plus lineup, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? I mean, I think the only thing is, the Schaufelberg over Fafa thing, we've talked about maybe that's a dependency. We've seen that Schaufelberg and Serge have been on the field at the same time, so I feel like that's probably what led to that decision. Mm-hmm. But, like, other than, obviously Schaufelberg and Fafa, they have differences. I don't think there's a huge drop-off, but I look at that and I go, this is a lineup that could beat people. This is number one. This is what we do in the playoffs, and we didn't do anything. It was... kind of poor. So, I mean, it was very disappointing from that aspect. In a way, like you and I have talked about, Seattle's always been one of those clubs we respect and we know have traditionally been good. And so, it's one of those where I'm like, oh man, it's a Seattle match. Like, even though they're not a rival, I feel like you get up for that. It's a big deal.
Yeah, it is a good game.
And so in some ways I'm like, well, it's, we anticipated it would be a good opponent. And it's not like we wanted to go in and think we'd fight, just beat them down. But it was disappointing because we just didn't produce anything.
Yeah, I was at the match for the first half, and we'll talk about that in the second half. But the vibe was first of all, the attendance was sparse, considering the match we were playing and considering the weather. It was beautiful. It was absolutely beautiful Saturday night, considering we hadn't been away for so long, I expected more people to be there. They were not. And not to say that it wasn't full, but I expected more fans to be in the stadium. A lot of Seattle fans, not to like Atlanta levels, but so the vibe going into the match was kind of off. Everything was just kind of off. For example, I said in section 118, and the VAR station is just a few rows in front of me. It broke. And so they spent most of the first half trying to fix it, which, of course, I learned later in the second half would probably maybe contributed to why it took so long to do the VAR. But we'll talk about that. But the match started very brightly. Like I texted you, I really like that lineup with Surridge and Leal and Hani and I really like that lineup. That lineup when we started, and they came out and played really, really well. We were really on the front foot. And then it seemed like at the 20-minute mark, after I think Surridge had missed a fairly good shot, he had made a fairly good strike at the goal. He was actually on the field, and I can tell you because he came on my side a little bit more during the first half, he was smiling. He looked like he genuinely was having fun. Leal looked like he was having fun. And then something happened in the 20-minute mark. And then everyone just started it was almost like they were like, well, okay, well, we didn't get our shot, so we're done. And they started chirping at each other, and it was really weird. Again, I don't want to play armchair or psychiatrist, but there was a notable change in the tenor of the match. More than halfway through the first half, because they started really, really well. And it was a really fun game to watch, because both Seattle and Nashville came out really bright. They came out really wanting 3 points. And so I mm-hmm. thought, okay, great. This is going to be a really good match. And then it just turned. And then some poor officiating really put a damper on the whole sort of vibe. And anyway, that was my gut reaction to the match. All right, let's talk about the hardest working player. And again, this is going to be pretty difficult because, like I said, after the first 25, maybe 30 minutes, things got kind of weak. Hardest working for you?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, you know, we usually tend towards that whole, you know, midfielders or wingback people who put in high effort. And I mean, it's one of those because it's not, there wasn't necessarily that outstanding effort. Like I thought about Jacob, you know, because obviously Jacob runs, you know what I mean? And he had a couple breaks and he played well, but it didn't quite stand out to me. I feel like I'm kind of defaulting to this, but I'm going to give it to Walker because I feel like Walker had a good game. He had some work to do back there. He had some key clearances. Which was the League's Cup, the Monterey one, where it looked like, oh my gosh, Walker, defensive player of the year, performance outstanding. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't quite that level, but I still felt like he was putting in one of the better jobs back there and just kind of keeping things consistent. And, you know, they didn't start Rudiez because he got late minute scratched, I guess, at warm-up or whatever, but there were still some Seattle chances that went forward. They still had quite a few shots on goal, and I feel like he and Jack both played well. I think it's just, you know, more of Zimmerman kind of stands out a little more, and I know he was trying to also do the things he does on the offensive end, trying to make things happen, but our balls to the box just never did anything. All of our our corners, I should say. So I feel like, you know, Walker was trying to get on the end of those things, and it didn't work. So it was probably the best of a not great pile of efforts.
Yeah, I'm going to give it to Leal. He really, especially during the first half, was classic Leal. He was dispossessing guys left and right. He was coming back to the ball and just being a menace, menace in the midfield. He was truly back in sort of the form we've seen him previously. I wish that he had gotten a little more on the one. He took a shot from range, which again, back to classic Leal. He didn't really get a lot of power on it, and I think he felt disappointed in that. Even if it still looked like the classic Leal. So I'm kind of, again, we've talked about this before. I'm sort of manifesting. I want classic Leal back, where he's happy and he's really aggressively going after the ball in both possession and dispossessing players of the ball. So yeah, that was hardest working for me. And he was a presence from start to finish while he was on the field. So I'm definitely going to give it to Leal. MVP for you?
The fans for State. No, I'm just kidding. I mean, whoever fixed that VAR thing. No, I was actually thinking along your lines. I was going to give it to Leal because, again, it looked like classic Leal being in the right places, because we've seen some games where he has just disappeared and it's been disappointing. Mm-hmm. He did not disappear. He was present. He didn't score. He didn't have that many shots on goal, or I should say shots. You know what I mean? But he looked good. And especially because, I mean, shit, I love Dax, but Dax definitely looked the tired old Dax who got picked on. Yeah. I feel like he thrived because both he and Godoy have always been guys who are decent in possession and can handle pressure and break out of it, because, you know, if you push them, they have the individual speed to say, hey, I'm just going to turn on you and run away. You know, I'm going to dribble away from you. I feel like he and Godoy both did that a little bit in this, and I think that was key value because, you know, Alex, who did come on later for Shaq, Alex doesn't do that in those situations. You know what I mean? He's just going to kind of end up back passing or moving around. He doesn't have the ability to do that. And I feel like Leal did. And I feel he played well in this situation and kind of stood out to me where he was handling some of that pressure and working within it. And it just felt like kind of the rest of the team was just not working with him on the same level. So I actually was very pleased with what I saw from him. And if I see that effort from him more, I'd be like, okay, this is the classic Leal we need. And he can get that starting job back that's kind of been his, not been his, depending on the lineup. But it was just again a great effort among, or, you know, the best effort I saw among other ones, but I was really pleased to see more of those features of a confident Leal who wanted to play, was not in his own head and trying to do that, like, which I think is the key for him. I don't know that his performance is ever really affected by the other people. It's all about his view of the performance.
Yeah, the biggest opponent that he's facing is what's between his ears. It doesn't Almost it does always. Not yeah, seem, he does not seem to get rattled by other the other team or the refs. Yeah. Speaking of, my MVP goes to Godoy because solely and it's solely for one moment in the match. There's only one moment, and it's where when he after he got the yellow card and started really, and I think he said some fairly unkind things to the incredibly ripped ref. By the way, those guys. Like I said during the match, we got the CrossFit team refereeing crew. They are ripped. Anyway, the Godoy, the ref actually goes over to Walker, who I think had the captain's armband that night. I'm not sure. And it's like said, "Hey, you need to check your." And Walker looks at Godoy and says, "Hey, we good?" And Godoy says, "Yeah, we're good." And that was it. And then Godoy just, even though it was an unfair yellow. It was an unfair yellow. The commentator said we were booing our heads off.
Yes, it was crap.
And that really put a sort of a punctuation mark on the kind of poor, everything was just bad at that point in the game. And Godoy just, he worked through it. You know, mentally he worked through it. And I think that was really good. And he was a presence on the field Saturday night that was trying to move. He was definitely chirping at guys, trying to get the ball forward. It was like, let's attack. We need to be at. He was definitely like waving guys up, like, let's go up. And so I don't know if that's right or wrong. Again, strategy wise, maybe that's not someone you want on the field if you're trying to do a certain style of play. But I gave it to Godoy just because I've seen him lose his cool and then get worse. Right, yeah. And actually play poor and play worse, but he didn't. He really. So I'm just giving an MVP for just sheer control of his emotions. All right, we don't have any goals to talk about, so let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about some, you know, maybe questions. What did we learn? We'll talk about the match in sort of more detail. John will share a couple of key stats, and then we'll tell you who we're wanting to get off our pitch. Stay with us. And we are back. So John's on the road out west. How's the food out there?
It's pretty good. There's a lot of interesting different meats, you know, elk, bison, but you know, there's no breakfast tacos.
You know what? My favorite meat and my favorite breakfast taco at my favorite places is the carne asada steak tacos at Tex-Mex Tacos, Tempo Tex-Mex Tacos in Section 118 at the stadium. I had it Saturday night. It was delicious, and I will tell you more about how it helped me get halfway through the match a little bit later. That's a teaser. All right. They're not a sponsor of this pod, by the way, but I wish they were. All right, John, what kind of questions do you have about this match? After this match, what kind of questions are lingering in your mind?
So it's a kind of like you said, halfway lesson learned, halfway question, and I'll let you respond. So in thinking about this match, not as much San Jose, because again, that was an odd one. Kansas City, and then, and now, of course, my brain can't think of who we played before that. But in those last three matches, I feel like looking at it, we didn't score a lot of goals. So we didn't score against Seattle. We scored one against Charlotte. We scored three against Kansas City, which I'll talk about more. But I feel like I look at those games, and a couple of them, we won the possession battle. In a couple of them, they tried to stop us from counterattacking. And I think more and more we've talked about, we look more like the team in 2021 that's tying more, we're not getting aggressive. I almost feel like we've talked about, you know, you've given your age-old saying of like, you know, people have figured us out. I almost feel like it's not that just people have figured us out. People have started to respect our counterattack, meaning they've decided Nashville's primary goal is to counterattack on us. Mm-hmm. We're going to stop that. We're going to allow you to get set piece goals. We're going to allow you to get crosses and risk that those, which again are lower success factors, are not going to end up working on us, or we're going to be able to defend those well enough and we're going to sell out to stop the counterattack. Mm-hmm. That's what I feel like Seattle's press and Seattle's lines did. I feel like Charlotte did a little bit of that in that game. I mean, yes, we scored. It was 1-1, but I feel like they tried to sell out to stop that. I actually feel like Kansas City for the first part of their game did the same thing. Mm-hmm. But what happened is we did the, you know, the second choice. So we didn't score on that first option of counterattack, but we scored on the first set or that first corner. Mm-hmm. And then they had to start pushing and, you know, spreading out more to try and get back in the game, especially because they were at home and they were going for it. And that's when we were able to counterattack successfully and get more goals. And that's when we piled it on. I feel like, you know, when I look back at those Leagues Cup teams, the Mexican teams came out to play. The Miami game, they came out to play their game, which was possess and set up camp in our end. And both of those led to, because those Liga MX teams push a lot of people forward, and because Miami possessed the ball and, you know, brought nine people forward, we were able to counterattack because they were pushing so hard. And, you know, again, we talk about even the second Miami game, they possessed, they pushed forward, they try to win. And
yeah, that's definitely, you know, how we beat Toluca. We were behind Toluca all the time. Like, we got behind them so easily because they were so aggressive. Yeah.
And so I feel like I look back and I'm like, why did we do so well in Leagues Cup? It's because all of the teams we played there, the Mexican teams, and again, Miami, the way it was different. It wasn't the flowing, going forward quickly. It was a slow build-up, death by a thousand passes. But all of those led to situations where we had the option to counterattack because they had committed so many numbers forward. And I feel like with Charlotte, with Kansas City, again, the first part of the game, and with Seattle, we've seen them saying, no, we're just not going to do that. We're just not going to commit that many men forward. We're going to keep two center backs and probably one of our wing backs forward, and if one, back, and if one of them goes forward, we'll, you know, the other guy on the other side will pull back. So I'm like, I think they just said that we're going to play so disciplined to prevent this, and when they do, this is the result. You know what I mean? Like, it goes to show that really we are very dependent on that. So that's kind of my lesson learned, is we're not a great team when we can't counterattack necessarily, because we know we can't break things down, but it's just that I also feel like in this game in particular, our crosses and our corner kicks were all just poor.
They're very bad.
But I feel like, in Kansas City, they weren't quite as bad, which is why we scored. But I feel like that's, to me, the thing is, it looks like teams just respect our counterattacks so much, they've decided that that's not going to be how you beat us, and it makes it harder for us to win. And that's what we've seen in this recent struggle, if I had to summarize it in one thing. I don't know. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that, and maybe I'll talk a little bit about it in my question, but I think that we were, in the first 20 minutes of the match, maybe 25 minutes of the match, when we were really, I feel like we were fairly aggressive.
Yeah.
We were trying some different things. I think, maybe I don't want to spoil my question, but I think you're right. Although it seemed like Seattle, Brian Smetzer is a really good coach. I've said this before on this podcast. Brian Smetzer is a really, really good coach. And we struggle against well-coached teams. I'm going to be honest. Like, we really struggle against well-coached teams, because I think you're sort of dancing around the sort of central point, which is when someone knows us and can game plan against us, when they've got the time to and the space to, I think that that's what they've just figured us out. And, you know, Brian has a team that will follow his game plan to the letter. Mm-hmm. So I think it was more about coaching. I think that Seattle punches way above their talent weight, and it's because they are a well-disciplined, well-coached team. And I'm not taking anything away from their young talent or their veterans either. They're very good players. But the league's full of good players. I mean, I'm sorry, but they are. I mean, most of the league's full of good players. There is a lot of parity in our league. Unlike, you know, other leagues. So, I don't know. I maybe that's a cop-out answer, but I feel like, and I've been thinking a lot about that especially when we face teams like Seattle, it's because, you know, Seattle knew they know who they are. They're not trying to be something different. And I feel like we're still struggling to figure out sort of this jinx we have on scoring. That's always been the story about Nashville. They're great in defense, but they can't score. And so we're still struggling with that identity. Maybe, I hate to put it in that such stark terms, but maybe that's something we need to think about, watch for. So it's going to lead into my question, which is, you know, does this team have it in us to score goals in the playoffs?
I mean, yes, but not if we can't do it our way. In other words, I feel like last year when Hani was on his MVP form, and even early this year, I could see him trying to take over games. I feel like teams have absolutely committed to not letting that happen. And outside of him, I don't know that there's a player that can do that. Jacob has game-breaking speed, but usually he needs someone to break with him and pass to, because he's going to draw attention. And, you know, so he needs some sort of assistance. Sam's done decent job. You know, other people run with him, but it's not, I don't think you can rely on that. You know what I mean? We've seen that we have some ability in set pieces, but it's not as the most consistent. You know what I mean? You can't rely on set pieces every game. The stats tell you, you're just not. You're going to have, you know, 80% of corners you just don't score on. Yeah. You know what I mean? So, I mean, the answer is we should have the ability to do it, but I don't know that we do. And, you know, you talk about that coaching. Like, there are sometimes, like, I feel like sometimes I just don't know that Gary's the guy who, I guess the best thing I can think of is like an NBA play where, you know, the NBA, you call the timeout, you've got 30 seconds left, you draw up a play and you say, okay, you're going to inbound to this guy, this guy's going to draw a screen, you know what I mean? You draw a play to get your best player open and you do these things. And I don't know that, I mean, again, soccer, you can't script, you know, a series of what's going to happen the next 10, 15 seconds that quickly to do it. But I don't know that Gary's also the guy to draw up that plan to be like, okay, we're going to run an isolation to get this guy open because he's going to be the man and I want him to take the shot. I feel like he would say that and he'd like, I want Hani to be the man to take the shot. You guys are going to do this to get him open, but it doesn't always work. And sometimes the other team, the rest of the team doesn't see Hani open or doesn't know how to get the Hani the ball. And they're, you know what I mean? Like I don't know that I trust that we can do that as much, which is one of the big pointing things. I trust that we can wait out teams. We can bunker down and we can do that and keep them from scoring. I just don't know if we have what we need there. I feel like we need, you know, in some of the games, it's just been come down to, you know, we need that little bit of luck or a little bit of whatever sprinkled in to make it happen. Like we have a hard time manufacturing goals. And I think more so what I'll talk about in the stats, sometimes, and in this game, we had a hard time manufacturing shots.
All right. And yeah. Let's go right into it. So let's talk about the stats.
So, you know, 0.27 expected goals, 5 total shots. I saw a couple people, I think Ben Wright was the first one to tweet it, and other people kind of retweeted it, but I think they said that was the worst total we've had for a home game at Geodis, because, you know, Nissan, we may have had some other sinkers, but I think that was the lowest total we've ever had at Geodis. So in other words, this was our worst offensive effort, and that's what I'm talking about. It wasn't just, we had trouble getting a goal, yes. We had trouble generating shots, and you can't score if you don't shoot. And I mean, that's the key problem there. Like, I think that was Seattle's being well organized and just not allowing us to have the ball to do that, to do the things the way we want to. And that's going to be, that is what will be a problem coming to playoffs. Like, yeah. If you look back at the other games, some of this other stuff, like, you know, against San Jose, we had shots. It was a weird game, but we were able to put some stuff on frame. You know, back to that Kansas City game, I told you, yes, we won, obviously, but we were able to put things on frame. We were doing things. We were creative. It just felt like it all ran dry and everyone was just kind of sitting around like, we're getting the ball forward. Now what? You know,
and I feel like that's what, if we were reversing this and we were a Seattle podcast, mm-hmm. I feel like they would be saying that about this match because they mm-hmm. had plenty of shots, but none of them, but I got to tell you, other than a couple from Ladero that missed wide, they mm-hmm. didn't really have any dangerous for the whole game. Again, for the whole match, I don't think they really had any dangerous. Maybe two.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, but again, they had 13 shots. So it used to be like, well, you know, if we took them better, if we did a little more with ours, it was, I mean, like, it just felt like there wasn't offense to it. Yeah. You know, Sam had that one opportunity to turn and he shot a great shot. It just went wide of goal. Like, that was
it was a great shot.
That was our best opportunity. And if he had made that, it would have been beautiful and something I would expect from his caliber. But, mm-hmm. you know, it didn't work. So.
Yeah. All right, John. Let's talk about who or what needs to get off our morning edition pitch.
Time zones.
Yeah, no, right?
Well, I'll go first. You know, I could point out, as you mentioned, traveling, because that's been a whole thing. You know, when you fly into the airport, you're on approach, and all of a sudden you feel the plane start going up again, and then they come on the air like, oh, no, you got waved off. There was too much turbulence. I was like, okay. I could complain about the in-flight Wi-Fi that made it very hard to watch the game. But you know what? When I stopped and thought about it, the fact that I'm at 34,000 feet, mm-hmm. traveling at 400 miles an hour, and I'm actually able to stream a soccer game is actually kind of miraculous. So I was almost going to do that, but I was like, you know, it's actually kind of a miracle of technology considering where we were 10 years ago. I'm like, you know what? I can't actually be mad about that. But I will say that the thing that I have that's been eating at me is being out here, beautiful, by the way. Everything's nice and, beautiful. But I'm driving around and we go to a restaurant last night, got some food, checked some of the other places. It's fall here, so it's verging on snow. And because of that, they call it kind of the end of season, which the bummer with that is with the end of season means they're acting like it. So, we go to a restaurant last night, half the menu had black lines over it. They're like, yeah, we're out of the things that do that. And because the end of season, we're not ordering more to get that. I'm like, okay. Literally, the beer menu, all the cans were there. On the draft side, every single one,
Oh,
there was
no.
one item left on draft. Everything else was just X'd out. And they're like, yeah, we've emptied the kegs, they're done. And I go to this, I'm like, oh yeah, we're already closed for the season October 1st. I'm like, what's October 2nd, man? And all this stuff. So I'm like, I get it. It's winter here. You don't get tourists driving through. They close roads, the 1st of November. I understand it, but man, guys, there's still people coming out here. Why'd it have to be me? But that was a little bit frustrating. But that's not actually what gets up the get off my pitch. The get off my pitch goes to the government for almost ruining my vacation for not signing a spending bill that would have shut down all of the national park. So you guys need to, I know we don't do politics,
We don't.
and I'm not picking a side,
Nope.
but in general, the fact that we're such a fragile system that sometimes people not voting on things meant I would have had to cancel a vacation would have been the worst experience.
Oh yeah.
So
I didn't even think
yeah.
about it. Oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't even think about that.
Oh, dude, I was
Wow.
checking the plane the whole time out here. I'm like, oh, look, the House passed bill. Okay, the Senate said, look,
Yeah.
again, I don't want to pick sides because whatever. Just the fact that that happens and we can decide to not fund our country is a really weird quirk of
No,
our government that in
that we
some
can
ways,
truly say that's a nonpartisan issue, I
Yeah,
believe.
it's a
Yes.
nonpartisan get off my pitch. It was frustrating. But so, yes, they can get a red card for that.
My red card, I can tell you who needs to get off my pitch is alcohol. Alcohol can get
Oh,
off my pitch.
interesting.
John, I attended the Tennessee Brew Fest at First Horizon Park on Friday night with some friends that I hadn't seen in a while. And it's one of those things where they give you tiny cups, tiny little tiny cups. You're like, oh, and there's like 50,000 vendors. You're like, oh. And so we spent 2 hours, and I spent 2 hours basically going through the Duval, the Belgian beer line about 50 million times to the point they were like, sir, I mean, come on. This is a sample
Oh,
size. I'm like,
really?
yeah, they're like, you need to like move on. Anyway, the mixture of beers and frivolity led to me waking up Saturday morning, which I predicted on this podcast. This was the one prediction that did come true. Severely hungover. So alcohol can get maybe a double yellow alcohol and age, because I used to could do this and have fun on Friday nights, and I can't do this anymore. I can't do this anymore. So. Yeah, so I made it halfway through the match, and it wasn't just because of the poor refereeing or just the poor play after, we sort of gave up on the match. It was because I had done everything I could from hydration to napping to try to make it through the entire match. I couldn't do it. I could not do it. I finally had to get up at halftime. Walked to my car, drove back home. Like I said, I had a frosty and I went to bed. But the Tex-Mex tacos that actually got me through the first half. Like the
Oh, I
greasy,
bet.
yeah, it was so, and they were, and she, and it was, they were so fresh. So we're gonna take a break. When we come back, we're gonna tell you a couple of matches coming up. We'll give you our score predictions and then tell you what we got wrong. So stay with us. We are back. All right, John, if people want to tell us when they're hungover at a match or otherwise, how could they give us that feedback? How could they tell us their situation?
Well, you could go onto Twitter at UMP underscore pod and you could mention, talk about it, bring up all those stories, or tell us who or what you would like to get off your pitch this week.
Yes, and you can also catch us live typically when John's not out of town or I'm not suffering from allergies. Sunday nights at 8 p.m. Central Time. We like to broadcast live on the Twitter and on the YouTube. You can catch us at Get Off My Pitch on YouTube. All right, John. Who are we playing and when are we playing them?
Well, we have a double week game as we were winding down. But for a reminder, because I know we're going to talk about playoffs, four games left total, three home games, one away. So
Okay.
this week we got a doubleheader. We're going to play Orlando in Nashville, 7:30, because again, classic local time. And then Saturday we're going to Philadelphia play, which will be at 6:30 because again, Eastern time zone, so it'll be that little bit earlier game. So we play both of those this week. They're not quite as big of matches as we may have thought earlier because, as we'll talk about playoffs, Nashville has, for the fourth year in a row, clinched a playoff spot. So
Nice.
mild congratulations to us. We did it backsliding in with the tie, but we still clinched a playoff spot. But with that, these games are not quite as significant because all of us are in there. It's more about shuffling for position of who's going to be hosting a playoff game and all that. Orlando's pretty secure and probably will. Philadelphia is more on the borderline, so for them, it's a little more of an important game. But again, everybody's playing Wednesday, so who knows, that'll change the tune, and who knows what it'll look like Saturday.
Yeah, score predictions, do you think Orlando and Philly?
We're in the playoffs. I've got to assume that Gary's not going to just take his foot off the gas and coast. But if I look at it mathematically, it would be a long shot for us to host a game. So it feels weird because it feels weird. It feels kind of like we don't have a lot to play for because we can win out and we're probably still not going to get that. I don't think Gary's going to go into, hey, we're in and let's rest players mode, especially because, again, we've had some very rough couple games. I'm going to assume Gary's going to go out and play this like he normally would. I think we go out to win on Wednesday because it is a home game, and we go out for the tie on Philly for a road game. I think that's what we have to do. So I'm going to go 2-1 or win against Orlando, and then we go for the tie, but I think we absolutely lose to Philly 2-0.
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah, I just.
I actually have 2-0 for Orlando and then
Ooh, okay.
1-1 for Philly. I think we actually play Philly pretty tight. Mainly just because I think, and maybe this is our, well, let's just go into our playoff look. So since we go in our score predictions, so I guess where are we at in the playoff standings right now?
So we are seventh, which means that we would play the second place team, which currently is Orlando. So if all things go, this could be a preview of the playoff thing. And part of the reason I picked to win is I do feel like we talk about teams wanting to bunker down defense. I don't think Orlando is a team that's going to say, let's go out and make sure to stop Nashville. They're going to come out and say, we want to. Yes, they're going to play. We're going to play Orlando ball, and that's going to give us opportunities to score. And that's why I think we can do it because they just don't. They're just a team that doesn't want to abandon their identity. They have some swagger. They like to play like that. They want to impose their style. And again, I just don't see a universe where they say, let's just bunker down and weather this out. So I do think that's why I think we get some goals. But that's who we'd currently face. New England is second just behind them, or sorry, is third with 52 points and a game in hand, so they could. But New England's been very up and down with the coaching change. I feel like I just don't know that I can rely on them to predict that they might jump Orlando, but they could. Again, we sit in seventh. We have a game in hand on Atlanta, but they're 4 points ahead of us now because we lost. So again, we're right now, unless things go differently, if everyone stays on pace, we're kind of locked into that seventh place is
Yeah,
where
that was my
I'd say.
question. That was going to be my question for segment two, which is, are we sort of stuck in seventh place? But
I mean, absolutely. I would tell you this. Eighth and ninth are at 38 points. They're seven behind us. Again, we would have to basically lose out, and they would NYCFC would have to win out for them to pass us. I don't see that happening.
yeah.
Again, Atlanta's the one above us. They would have to drop some points, but they've been playing some really good ball the second half of this year after the summer window. So again, I don't see them doing that. So I think we're kind of stuck in
I
seventh.
hate Atlanta. I
I
hate their
know. I
team and
know.
I hate their fans, but I gotta hand it to them. They have talk about bringing in players that make an impact. They have done it. They have brought in some real talent into that team, and that's who I don't want to face. I'm not
I
looking
agree.
forward to that matchup because Atlanta
No,
is good.
and honestly, I think it's a good thing they've done it because they've brought in a lot of talent because we talked about it. You and I think we're both surprised Almeida made it through the summer transfer window. I don't think there's a way on earth that he's here after winter.
No,
I think he absolutely is.
no.
So what I'm saying is I think it's good for them because they've built a team that can continue with talent without him, but it's also, it kind of feels a little bit like, hey, let's go all in while we have him. And, so it was kind of a smart move on their part. But yeah, I will say this interesting stat related to this. We did win the Southern Belt, you know what I mean? Because they tied with DC that last game. So we are still the Southern Belt champions over Atlanta, DC, and Charlotte. But if this continues and the spots don't swap, this will be the first year in MLS that Atlanta has ever finished above us. Again, asterisk, last year it was just based on points, not conference position, because we were in separate conferences. But this will be the first time that they've ever finished above us with more points or above us in the Eastern Conference. So that could be a bummer of a streak to break, but it seems like it might be the reality at this point.
Yeah, I think we have to face that. All right, John, what did we get wrong?
I did not have much from last time. I don't think I had any notes. And if I did, they're also not on this computer because travel.
Yep. So let's go ahead and call it there. Thank you so much for joining me this early in the morning, John. I do appreciate it. Have a great vacation. You at home and abroad, if you're vacationing, have a great time. Fall is upon us. We're going to be here for the playoffs. We're looking forward to it. Thank you so much and have a great rest of the day.
We'll see you.